Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Over the past few months, the Wildside News has presented a big picture of the new players in this new energy vision. You're up to date about the state of the oceans. You've been introduced to a solar technology that can change the world. You've been introduced to the captains of the clean tech movement. And when you head on into the archives, you see the amazing friends of all that Earth Day 35 represents. When we return, we put it all together. So get ready for the real New World Order marching towards peace and stability and a healthy, hope-filled world for us all here on the Wildside News. This 35th anniversary of the first Earth Day is the beginning of a whole new vision. To a very large extent, we all really get it. Most everyone loves our land and the wild creatures. We value clean air and clear vistas for our visions to roam. We want to get along with our neighbors and with the world. Let's be honest. What is most encouraging is that America is united now for our own good, to get to work, to invest, to build, to reconstruct, to invent and forge a new American dream. It has come together, and it will serve us all so well. So, to celebrate this moment, I want to bring us all some of the voices of the Earth that have helped to make this all possible. So now, from the voice of the Earth on the Wildside News, a tribute to wisdom.
Hello, everyone. We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and I might start with what is it? What it is really kind of takes an arrow back to Senator Mathias and what he did. He established a bipartisan effort to create a vision that would really preserve sections of land that are so powerful and that we have for years and years and years been using them kind of like slogans for how we identify the best of ourselves. And the beauty and the power of our natural places has always held a kind of symbolic place for Americans. So we should be protecting these areas for future generations to preserve something that really does bind us together. What that something is a love of our country's incomparable public land. What we do preserve as much as what we develop is going to define us as a people and really basically as a society in perpetuity.
Kathleen Rogers, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you so much.
I want to invite you to greet our listeners and share your thoughts for this very special Earth Day 2004.
Well, I'm very happy to be on, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's a very exciting day, and I think your listeners can be proud of the fact that as environmentalists or as people who care about the Earth, they are joining together today with at least 500 million to 600 million people who are also participating in Earth Day in over 170 countries.
What happens on a river cleanup?
What happens on a river cleanup? It can be anything as from a small group doing a shoreline along a parking lot of a campground or something, and then we have other groups who actually get in the water in canoes and rafts and pull just about anything that's not supposed to be there. They try to pull back out tires, paper cups, tin cans, that sort of thing. And we send them tips on how to organize their cleanup, safety tips, press releases on how to get press for it so that they can turn out some more volunteers. And we really don't dictate how they should conduct their cleanup, but we try to guide them along with what they need to do.
Hot spin there for me. I've had, a couple bad weeks where I couldn't do anything just because of pain levels, and he would sit right there by my side. He's almost gotten to the point where he can anticipate my needs. Even when I'm, physically down and unable to do much, if I want to go to the refrigerator to get something out for supper, he knows that that's where I'm headed, and he opens that door for me. We get out, and I'm getting tired or something. He moves just a little bit closer and positions himself so I can grab his harness, like he's ready.
one British captain, a Captain Codrington, actually said, he predicted, there will be many busted heads in Baltimore before nightfall. And I think that shows the attitude of at least some of the British officers involved in this. The British ships got within range of the fort's guns. One eyewitness said it sounded like thunder when the fort's cannons fired. They were fired in such rapid succession.
Wow.
And the Baltimoreans went on the rooftops. We have a lot of letters, people saying that they were on the roof of the Holiday Street Theater, which is today City Hall. We also have letters of other people squirming out, you know, and climbing on the rooftops. And they said you could see the smoke curling up over the fort and the flashes of the fort's guns in the midst of the smoke.
Vince?
And, yeah.
Boy. Do you like your work?
Just a little bit. No, I love my work.
I know, it's so obvious.
I love my work.
You're a fabulous interpreter, and we didn't even have a chance to really talk about the rest of the park, but I'll tell you what, Vince is the best invitation to visit Fort McHenry in Maryland that I can imagine.
Well, American Hiking Society was formed in 1977 to be a national voice for America's hikers. And then as a part of our outreach in promoting and protecting foot trails and the hiking experience, 12 years ago we joined up with several key partners on the federal side, the National Park Service, the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and West Backpacker Magazine to launch National Trails Day. And then very shortly thereafter, Thorleif Fox came in as well to support this program. And what it is a national celebration of trails all across the country. And actually, we have events in every single state, one in Canada and three in Puerto Rico.
This is one of the most innovative, boundary-busting, and hope-filled realities for every person and animal and vista and community and nation on the planet. And here to tell you about it, as one of the principals in the new hydrogen car company, Cole Freitas. Cole, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Cindy.
Let's lay it on the table here. You say you have a hydrogen-powered car. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, we have more than one car. And what we did is we announced several weeks ago that we had we are making available for sale Shelby Cobras that run off a hydrogen internal combustion engine, and those are for wealthy individuals, high-end users, celebrities, people who will get a lot of visibility, and we partnered up with Carroll Shelby to make those cars. But we also offer pickup trucks that are F-150s and Rangers that also run off internal combustion engines using hydrogen that are much more affordable and that are comparable or a little bit more expensive than F-150s and Rangers that are new and run off gasoline.
Really, only 13% of the NPRA, which was the compromise that was worked out. Why is that so important in terms of this this area?
Well, just to highlight a few of the features, this area has very high-density nesting populations of the red-throated loons, the rare yellow-billed loon, common eiders, king eiders, long-tailed ducks, a number of shorebird species, and also populations of the threatened spectacle eider. This is a species that's actually listed under the Endangered Species Act as threatened. So those are birds that nest there. And then in the after breeding season, geese and many waterfowls molt their feathers, and when their wing feathers molt, they are actually flightless. And during that period of time, in July and a portion of August, these birds are very, very sensitive to any disturbance. They're very vulnerable because they can't fly. So they seek out the most valuable wetland complexes that have abundant food and low densities of predators and are very secluded. So the Teshikpuk Lake, and particularly the deep water lakes just north of Teshikpuk between Teshikpuk Lake and the Arctic Ocean, that area is a very high value for molting geese, and is considered by most scientists as one of the most significant goose molting areas in the entire circumpolar Arctic.
Bill Neal, you look into his eyes and you get hooked. He's an animal, he's a bird, he's a hero. You look at him, you realize this is someone true, man. This is not some celebrity who would, you know, fool around with some prostitute somewhere and disappoint you somewhere. This is a bird, it's real. You look at him, you know there's no disappointment to come. He is a true hero. He's not a politician. He does his thing, you watch him, and you feel good deep inside of your heart. He is my hero. That is how I spend so much time on him. I take all my vacation I have. I just practically took time off from work indefinitely until this stuff is resolved. That's the kind of effect he has on me.
I think I'm going to start off by giving you a greeting in chimpanzee. That really means just, hello, I'm Jane. You know, that's how they greet the morning.
The King of Bhutan, because leadership, radical leadership, radical, intelligent, caring leadership is required. Talk about that wonderful story.
Well, the Bhutanese looked around at the world, and they're sandwiched between China and India, two of the biggest countries in the world, and the King of Bhutan, who was an absolute ruler, decided that A, he was going to give up his absolute power, which he did, and established a parliament, and they all got together, and it's an educated, by the way, it's their top educated people. They're not ignoramuses. The King of Bhutan is 10 times as smart as George Bush and 10 times as well educated. Said, we're going to not go for gross national product alone. We're going to go for gross national happiness. We're going to preserve our forests. We're going to preserve our culture, and the diversity of cultures is one of the wonders of humanity. And we're going to work at making our people all happy, healthy, well cared for, and in a wonderful environment. Whether they'll totally succeed or not is still an issue. They let TV in, which may have been a big mistake.
Floresta was founded about 20 years ago by a group of Americans and Dominicans who had been working together doing hurricane relief following Hurricane David. And they became frustrated in giving out basically food aid and handouts day in and day out without addressing any of the root causes. So they decided to dig a little deeper and see why people were unable to make a living for themselves. And came to the very interesting conclusion, and it's especially interesting when you consider kind of the who these people were and the presuppositions they went in with, but they came to the conclusion that deforestation was one of the key causes, one of the root causes of rural poverty in the Dominican Republic.
My sermon this morning is captioned, God's Love in Nature. And I want you to journey with me this morning back into time, a time called the beginning. An earth with a sound ecological system, well-balanced ecosystem, clean, pure environment. Yes, that was paradise. Oh, my friends, I could imagine all the Amazonas, every species in those days, none were extinct. As they beautified, as they adorned the foliage or the flora with their lovely plumage. Oh, what a sight! Praise be to God!
And in 1991, I went to a Greenpeace rally for whales in Trafalgar Square. I was invited to be one of a group of celebrity speakers. And I had to talk about, I was given a piece to talk about long-range communication of whales across oceans and across many thousands of miles. And I was astonished at that because I had no idea that whales could do all these things. I, unlike a lot of people, had never heard the whale record, and because I think I was too busy doing Shakespeare or something at the time. But anyway, Roger Payne opened this rally for whales, and we met there at the rally, and we were married 10 weeks later. And when I met Roger, I remember writing that it was like standing on the shores of an ocean, and the waves just rolling in, and somehow I knew that I was encountering and finally embracing a much bigger world than just the world of theatrical and film and television acting that I'd been involved with.
the indigenous people have had such a tremendous impact on me, as you know from my other five books, which are all about them. And without their help, without having seen it from their side, I don't think I ever would have had the courage to write this book, and I don't think I ever would have had the heart to write the book, or the hope. The book is written out of a great sense of hope. When I wrote this book, I knew I was sticking my neck in the noose. And not suicidal or self-destructive. So I would only stick my neck in a noose if I had great hope that it was going to accomplish something positive. And the indigenous people, with all of their prophecies, from so many different cultures, as I talk about in the book, they all prophesy, so many cultures prophesy that we've entered a time of potential for tremendous transition for human beings to rise to a new level of consciousness and relate to each other and the environment in very different ways. And I have complete hope that we will do that. And I've realized that has to start by a true recognition of where we've come from and where we stand right now today. And part of that recognition involves recognizing what economic hitmen have done, what we've all done, in essence, to create this empire.
Now let's bring it down to people. What in the world can they do to become part of this process?
I think between the scientific community, the aquarium, communicators, perhaps this New Earth Observing System will be able to put part of this continuous picture of this continuous diagnosis of the ocean onto the internet. I think actually the internet may be a tool for creating the globally connected behavior that we will need in order to arrive at a management of a global problem.
Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity to talk to the whole world and tell them your thoughts about what is most critical in the years ahead.
The solving the global environmental issues that we see gradually accumulating will require a degree of human cooperation and interconnectedness that has not yet been seen.
We're working on it.
So are we.
Connect up brains, hearts, and hold hands, and then indeed we can look forward to a better and a more peaceful future if we help each other, if we maintain hope. So that's the message I have for you. Never give up. There's always hope. Thanks.
I want to thank all of you for tuning in and joining in. We can look back on this 35-year struggle and know that we have been on message and right all along. Now we need to unite and move our planet forward for us, for our children, and for this magical mystery tour of life on our great little planet Earth. So until next time, or any time on the archives, this is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again on your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.